This is the Everything Financial Radio Program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen, and welcome to what is going to be a very special program today. Joining me momentarily will be Mr. Jim Rogers. Jim is an American businessman, investor, and author, probably best known as the co-founder of the Quantum Fund with George Soros. He's also the creator of the Rogers International Commodities Index. Jim is based in now Singapore, and I had a chance to catch up with him this past week. Very excited to have him on the program. As I said, he'll be joining me momentarily. Also on today's program, I will be talking about my winter season update. Now, if you're a new listener to the program, that may not make a lot of sense to you, but here on the Everything Financial Radio program, we study economic cycles, and these economic cycles can be named after the seasons of the year. We happen to believe, as I'll explain on today's program, that we're in an economic winter season. We think the economy will not be good. There will be a number of investments that will not perform well moving ahead. And I'm going to give you my winter season update today. I just finished an update to my new retirement rules book, and I'll give you a sneak preview as to what you'll find in that book, which will be out in about 5 weeks or so. Let me also remind you, we do have some resources available to you. We here at the Everything Financial Radio program are all about education, and we have a class titled the New Retirement Rules Class that's all about how to plan for retirement in today's winter economic environment. We have another class coming up on Saturday, October the 10th. The cost for the class is just $49. You can get more information at the website newretirementrules.com. The website, again, is newretirementrules.com. You can also register there by completing the form on the right-hand side of the website. If you are planning for retirement, say age 55 or older, and want to learn how to maximize Social Security, want to learn about economic cycles and get a different perspective, frankly, a very different perspective from what you're likely going to get anywhere else, I would encourage you to invest a Saturday and come and check out the class. Again, the information is all posted at newretirementrules.com. We also have available a Social Security Maximization Dinner Workshop. We have one more coming up in September. It will be held on September the 24th. At Thornapple Point Golf Course, that's located out on 48th Street Southeast in Grand Rapids. If you're between the ages of 55 and 68, even if you're already collecting Social Security, at the event, we give you Social Security maximization strategies. So if you'd like to get more information on that or register for the free meeting on September the 24th, that includes dinner as well, go to socialsecuritydinner.com. I'm very pleased to have back on the program today a guest who really needs no introduction, Mr. Jim Rogers, who's the author of Street Smarts, Adventures on the Road and in the Markets. Jim is a returning guest to the program. He appeared about a year and a half ago. And Jim, welcome back on the program.
I'm delighted to be here. Delighted to be here, Dennis. Thanks.
Jim, tell the listeners about your book.
Oh, well, I've done a few books, Dennis. I never thought I'd do any books. And my publisher and agent said, why don't you pull it all together. You've done books about adventure and other things. So why don't you put it together how somebody got from the backwoods of Alabama to living in Asia and all the stuff that happened along the way. So I did. I guess it's a memoir as much as anything else. But like most of the things I try to do, I wanted to make observations on the rest of the world and what's going on out there, because there's a lot of stuff that has gone on and will continue to go on.
Well, Jim, let's talk a bit about your forecast for the stock market. I recently read an article where you were quoted as saying that the Federal Reserve might try to save the stock market one more time by printing money. So my question is, are you expecting a stock market decline, and to what extent? And if the Fed were to pursue that strategy, can they possibly be successful?
Well, first of all, we've had a bit of a stock market decline here recently, and I'm certain sometime in our lifetimes there are going to be stock market declines. We've had economic problems in the U.S. every 4 to 7 years since the beginning of the Republic, so I'm sure we're going to continue to have problems like that. It's not the end of the world. Happen all the time. They've always happened throughout history, and we're going to see them happen again. So So, yes. But more immediately, I would expect, you know, Dennis, it's been what it was 4 or 5 years without even a 10% correction in the U.S. stock market. I mean, that's an amazing anomaly because markets are correcting 10, 20% all the time, year after year. And yet we went a long time based on a lot of artificial money printing by all the major central banks of the world. So that's going to come to an end someday. And when it comes to an end, we're all going to suffer. My point was that the first time we start suffering, or once we start suffering a bit, let's say it goes down, I don't know, 16%, or you pick the number, everybody's going to call the central bank, the central banks around the world pleading and saying, you must save civilization. The central banks are going to panic. You know, they're just bureaucrats and academics. And so they will start doing something to save us. Looks like they may have already started doing something to save us. You know, the market went down a while, and then central bank, certainly the Federal Reserve, started talking about, oh, maybe we shouldn't do anything. I don't know what's going to happen, but somewhere along the line, they're going to panic and do something, whatever it is. That will probably be the last rally. We may have already seen it, for all I know. But after that, Dennis, we should all be knowledgeable, we should be worried, and we should be prepared.
So, Jim, I've talked to many guests who are predicting a significant decline in the market, not unlike what we saw maybe in 2008, due to all the artificial stimulus that the markets have received from the central banks around the world. Would you be in that same school of thought?
Well, no, of course. I mean, I don't know how anybody could not be in that school of thought. You know, we had a big problem in 2008 because of a huge debt increase. Well, and since 2008, the debt has gone up many, many times. The Federal Reserve alone has expanded its balance sheet from $800 billion of bonds to almost $5 trillion of bonds and garbage now. So that alone shows the extent of all the debt increase. The federal government's budget, Portugal, Italy, France, Japan, has been a huge increase in debt everywhere, and we're going to have to pay the price because this time it's not just debt, it's also huge money printing.
So, Jim, how will our average listener out there trying to manage maybe a 401k or an IRA or other retirement account, how will they be affected?
If you're invested in the wrong thing, you're going to lose a lot of money. We all are, all of us who are invested in the wrong thing. And when I say the wrong thing, stocks that are going to be vulnerable. The way to protect yourself, Dennis, is anytime you're an investor, the only way that one should invest is stay with what one knows. Everybody listening to this knows a lot about fashion or cars or sports or something. Just invest in what you yourself know a whole lot about. And yes, there'll be times in the market when they go down, but at least you know what you're doing and you're in companies that will survive and thrive. That's how you should invest. If I told you that you could only have 20 investments in your whole life, you'd be very careful about what you invested in. But most people, including me at times, jump around listening to hot tips. We listen to the internet or the radio or the TV or who knows what. And we wind up in things we don't know what we're doing, including me, I assure you. So the key is to stay with what you know.
So, Jim, let me ask you, going back to the Federal Reserve again, trying to get the market to rally one more time. Do they have any bullets left in the gun? Interest rates have been at 0% for the last 7 years. The only tool they have really left would be to print more money. Is that what you expect they'll do?
Well, who knows? You know, these guys are pretty creative. They can come up with all sorts of things, and they have a lot of in money and a lot of power. They can put on exchange. I mean, the things that people can do, I'm not suggesting it's going to happen this time, but in the past, people put on exchange controls, or they've made people buy bonds. They've made people buy stocks in some points in history. Why can't the Federal Reserve start buying the Dow Jones Industrial Average? They said they have the power to do that. I would not subscribe that they have the power, but these guys can be as creative as they want because they got a lot of power and a lot of money. It's it's not good what they're doing. It is not good, I repeat, but that doesn't mean they won't do it.
So, Jim, let's talk about in the time we have left, and if you're just joining us, we have the distinct pleasure of chatting today with Mr. Jim Rogers, author of Street Smarts, Adventures on the Road and in the Markets. Jim, are you seeing any areas of opportunity out there, and could you expand on what you're seeing?
Well, that's a very good question, Dennis. For the most part right now, I'm not. I'm watching for the reasons we've been discussing. I do have a few shorts, not nearly as many as I should, if things are going to go down. People should. I have shorted a few junk bonds in the U.S. Because interest rates will be going higher eventually, and junk bonds, of course, the spreads between junk bonds and government bonds are close to the narrowest in history. That should widen, and of course, when we have economic problems again, junk bonds will be suspect. But I bought a couple of countries in Africa recently, just very small positions because they've been beaten down so much. But I'm mainly just watching at the moment because many markets are still very high. The U.S. market's, you know, within 10% of its all-time high, et cetera, et cetera. So and I expect financial problems in the future. But one other place that I put money is the U.S. dollar. It's my largest currency position on the long side, but I'm mainly just watching right now.
So, Jim, what's your rationale on the U.S. dollar? Is it just the proverbial best house in a bad neighborhood?
Well, the U.S. dollar is a terribly flawed currency. With the United States, unfortunately, we're the largest debtor nation in the history of the world, Dennis. No nation in world history has had so much debt, and it's going higher and higher. But many people, when turmoil comes, flee to what they think is a safe haven. The U.S. dollar has been and still is perceived as a safe haven. So I put money there. I mean, people are not going to rush into the yen or to the euro or most other currencies you can think of. So people will flee to the U.S. dollar as the turmoil comes and gets more intense. It could even turn into a bubble if that happens. I hope I'm smart enough to sell a year or two or three from now. What I would do with my money then, I have no idea. But I do hasten to tell you again that the U.S. dollar has got serious, serious, serious problems, and we're all going to suffer, all of us, especially who are Americans, but everybody in the world, going to suffer down the road.
Well, we're chatting today with Mr. Jim Rogers, author of Street Smarts, Adventures on the Road and in the Markets. And in the next segment, when Everything Financial Radio returns, I'll be chatting with Mr. Rogers on his take on oil, gold, commodities, and all other things financial. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. I will continue my conversation with our very special guest today, Mr. Jim Rogers, in the next segment. You know, if you've been a longtime listener to the program, you know that we believe that economies cycle, that monies and currencies cycle. In fact, when it comes to economic cycles or economic seasons, we believe that during an autumn season where it seems that prosperity is everywhere, and in the United States that would, and really worldwide, it would describe the period of time from about 1982 through 2000. And if you think about the 90s, you think about a time of extreme prosperity. But behind the scenes during the autumn economic season, as everything seems to be going along very well, debt levels are rising to unsustainable levels. When debt levels reach unsustainable levels, then the winter economic season kicks in and debt has to be purged from the system. As debt is purged from the system, there are a number of ugly deflationary symptoms that occur. Now, I recently updated my book, New Retirement Rules, and as I mentioned at the outset of the program today, that book will be, the updated version of the book will be available here in about 5 weeks. Since that original book was published a little over a year ago, there has been a lot that has happened to validate my position that the winter economic season is indeed upon us. The symptoms of the economic season are escalating, as I predicted in the book, and I believe that the years ahead will find these symptoms becoming significantly more intense. In the last year, Since the original publication of my book, New Retirement Rules, just take a look at a few of the things that have happened. Chinese stock markets have collapsed along with the Chinese economy. Banks in Greece have implemented capital controls, limiting cash withdrawals to a minimal amount regardless as to one's actual bank account balance. Inflation in Argentina has reached nearly 40% annually as the country's currency is massively devalued via printing. The too big to fail banks? Remember the ones the taxpayers bailed out back during the financial crisis? They now have derivative exposure of more than $278 trillion. And if you're not familiar with a derivative, it's basically a risky side bet between banks. That's an oversimplification, but essentially that describes it. Now, this derivative exposure of more than $278 trillion is an exposure level that is 28 times these banks' total assets. So despite laws designed to prevent another financial crisis, the four largest banks in the country are 40% larger than they were at the time of the financial crisis. If you listened to last week's program, you know that our guest, Mr. Ian Gordon, pointed out that worldwide debt has increased 40% since the financial crisis to more than $200 trillion. Given these massive debt levels, I believe a much more severe repeat of the financial crisis is all but a certainty. The European Central Bank has embarked on a quantitative easing program. What does that mean? They're printing money. Following in the policy footsteps of the United States, Japan, and Britain, the European Central Bank began printing money in an attempt to stave off deflation, which had gripped the European continent. Deflation, incidentally, history teaches us, is an inevitable consequence of too much debt. This attempt to right the ship by the European Central Bank will fail, as it has every other time it's been tried historically. Here in the United States, stock markets have begun to break down as I have forecast. Stock markets are extremely volatile, and I believe the stock market highs for the year occurred in May, barring a massive, unprecedented policy response by the Federal Reserve. And even a bold policy move by the Fed may not be enough to prop up U.S. stock markets. Worldwide, you see central banks engaging in currency devaluation in an attempt to gain an export advantage. This race to the bottom as far as currencies are concerned will, in my view, again, lead to trade wars and a significant decline in world trade, just like excess tariffs did in the 1930s. You know, if you look at the headline unemployment rate, it looks pretty favorable. But when you look at the labor force participation rate, it's at the lowest level in nearly 40 years, which will be bad news for the economy moving ahead, again, in my view. Oil prices have fallen to the $40 per barrel range as deflation has kicked in. Other commodity prices like copper, iron ore, and aluminum have also fallen by double-digit margins. Now, there are other deteriorating signs that evidence the fact that the economic winter season is upon us and about to deepen, in my view. However, we'll focus only on these economic winter symptoms. And we talk in detail about these economic winter systems at our new Retirement Rules class. If you're just joining us and missed the opening of today's program, we do have another class coming up on Saturday, October the 10th. We just finished one, in fact, just this past week in the Grand Rapids area. But on Saturday, the 10th of October, we'll have another one. The cost for the class is just $49. We talk in the class about economic cycles. We talk about currency cycles, and we show you how we believe these cycles are very predictable and what's happened historically every time economic circumstances look like they look today. So in other words, we look at cycles and we believe we can predict where we're going from here based on what's happened in the past when we have been here. To check out the class, to get more information or register, simply visit the website newretirementrules.com. And another resource we have available here in the Grand Rapids area is a Social Security Maximization Workshop. That workshop is free. It includes a dinner as well. It's an hour and a half in length. And you can get more information by visiting socialsecuritydinner.com. If you'd like more information on that, we have a meeting coming up at Thornapple Point Golf Club on September 24. So again, the website, socialsecuritydinner.com. I'll be back with Jim Rogers after these words.
Give me your money.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. I have the pleasure of chatting today with a very bright gentleman, Mr. Jim Rogers, who's author of Street Smarts, Adventures on the Road and in the Markets. And Jim, we were talking in the last segment that you're long the U.S. dollar because it's been perceived as a safe haven. Along that same line of thinking, where would you place gold?
Well, I own gold, and I have for a long time, but I haven't bought any gold or silver in a few years because gold went up too much. It had an anomaly of going up 12 years in a row without a decline, and now it's having a long correction, a well-needed correction, so I'm not buying. I expect another opportunity to buy gold sometime in the next year or two. If that happens, I hope I'm smart enough to buy a lot of gold, a lot more gold. Gold, in the end, is probably going to wind up as a bubble itself, you know, because people, when we lose confidence in paper money, when we lose confidence in governments, gold will go through the roof. It's been seen as a refuge for a long time, and it will be again.
So, Jim, at a certain point, you mentioned that the U.S. dollar is flawed, and you mentioned that people eventually lose faith in paper currencies when too much is printed or created. Do you see at some point some country in the world going back to a gold exchange standard and keeping other currencies honest?
Well, the gold standard's been tried several times in history. It's never worked. It's never lasted very long because politicians always figure out a way to get around it or cheat on it. You know, they debase it or they change the rules or whatever. So even the gold standard has not lasted very long. Silver has been used much more often in history than gold, but same thing. I mean, politicians always find a way to cheat us and to make the public lose money. And the ones who lose the most, of course, are the ones who believe the politicians and believe what they say when they say it. Yes, it may be that. I mean, if the world collapsed tomorrow, we would probably grab for gold because we don't know what else to do. I might try SDRs, the special drawing rights from the IMF. I cannot conceive that the special drawing rights from the IMF would work because people like to think they have something in their pocket or something they can see and talk. And just a bunch of bureaucrats saying this is money has not usually been accepted by people. So, yeah, we might try gold, but, again, I don't think gold would last because very long because, again, politicians always find a way to get around it. And if you could have a strict gold standard or strict any kind of standard, it might work. The best solution, Dennis, is to have a free market in money. That's what has worked throughout history. There were many times in history when we could use goats or cows or silver or seashells or whatever we wanted as money. That's the best way because then the politicians cannot control us and cannot control the money. But even that fails because they always change the rules.
So, Jim, since you said a free money system, do you have an opinion on some of the cryptocurrencies that have developed over the past several years, like Bitcoin?
Well, I don't really know enough about them. I do know, Dennis, that the world needs something. We were just discussing how the world needs something to compete with U.S. dollar and eventually replace the U.S. dollar. And we do know that the Internet or the computer is changing everything and will continue to change everything we know. So it could very well be that some kind of electronic money or computer system eventually replaces or competes with money as we know it. The risk there, of course, is that then the politicians have complete control, even more so than now. If you and I have money in our backyard or gold in our backyard, they don't know it and they can't control it. But if all money is on the computer or electronic, then they can just snatch it from us whenever they want to.
So, Jim, going back to the gold and silver conversation, would you have a position that you'd be more bullish on gold or silver? Would you favor one metal over the other?
Well, at the moment, silver is cheaper on a historic basis than gold. So probably if I had to buy one today, and I'm not buying either today, I would probably buy silver just because on a historic basis, relative basis, it's cheaper.
Jim, let's talk about oil prices. Oil prices have been collapsing. To what can this be attributed in your view, and does this trend continue?
Well, if you go back and look at your chart, you'll see that oil peaked last the summer of 2014. That's when America was intensely negotiating with Iran, and so we went to Saudi Arabia and said, all right, dump oil, let's put pressure on them. The deadline was July 31st, and the charts almost exactly mesh. Saudi Arabia wanted to do something about fracking, so they were willing to dump oil. America's trying to put pressure on Iran and Russia. Saudi Arabia dumped oil, got the price down, had a big collapse. Normally when you have a big collapse, Dennis, you then have a bounce, a dead cat bounce, it's often referred to. So we had the dead cat bounce, and then nearly always in markets, they go back to test the lows to see if those lows were the final lows. That's what we're doing. I suspect we are making our lows. Maybe it's a complicated bottom here and as we speak, and maybe a few more weeks or months. But the fundamentals for oil continue to get improved because the world has consumed more oil than it has discovered for quite some time now. And you see some of the major oil companies have reduced their reserves by a billion barrels here in the last recent past. So the fundamentals get better, except for fracking. Now, fracking has been a wonderful thing, brought a lot of oil on, but those wells are very short-lived, first of all, and second, they can't make money at $40 or $50 oil. So I would suspect we're making a bottom, and that even if the world doesn't recover economically, the shortages of oil are going to develop again, and so we're probably making our bottom, or near our bottom. It doesn't mean it can't go lower. You know, you can always have a double bottom that's a false breakdown, but I suspect that's what's happening now.
What's your take, Jim, on base metals? With the Chinese economy slowing, we're seeing many commodities, including base metals, in a downtrend. What's your outlook there?
Well, you're exactly right, partly because so much some more base metal production came online. I more or less have the same view of base metals than I do of oil. It just takes a little longer to bring base metals on stream or to turn them off than it does oil. But I would suspect that we're seeing a bottom in base, a complicated bottom in base metals as well. If you want a commodity, Dennis, I would find agriculture most promising, but all commodities, all assets at the moment are under duress and suspect because of this artificial money printing we've had for so long, and that's caused serious distortions in world economic markets.
Jim, in the time we have left, explain what your view is as to what's going on in China. We've seen the Shanghai composite, I think, correct 40%. Real estate prices are collapsing. Is this just the effect of debt excesses in China like we're seeing all around the world?
Well, first, the Chinese market has done better this year than the American stock market, and over the last year, 12 months, the Chinese stock market, I think, is the strongest stock market in the world. So, yes, it had a big drop intra-year during the period. But if you want to blame somebody, we should be blaming the American stock market or the German stock market. The Japanese markets, these have all done much worse than the Chinese market. But yes, the Chinese market went up too fast, went up a lot very fast. Now it's had a correction. I bought shares in the 3 or 4 days when it had massive collapses. I bought Chinese shares going forward, looking to the future. I've learned in my investing career that whenever you can buy panic, you should. It's usually going to be okay a year or two later. So, yes, the Chinese are having some problems right now. Then there's one major change in the world besides money printing and debt is that now the Chinese have debt, too. In 2008, the Chinese didn't have much debt for historic reasons, but in the last 7 years, they've built up some debt themselves. So the Chinese are not going to be able to save us like they did in 2008. They, too, have added up a lot of debt.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Jim Rogers, author of Street Smarts, Adventures on the Road and in the Markets. And, Jim, it's been a real pleasure having you on the program again. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Dennis. Let's do it again sometime.
We will. Everything Financial Radio returns after these words.
I said money. Money changes everything.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Thanks for tuning in today, and thanks again to our special guest today, Mr. Jim Rogers, for joining us from his home in Singapore. You know, on today's program, I'm talking about evidence that the economic winter season is advancing. And I talked about the fact that there were 10 signs that I've written about in my revised version of the New Retirement Rules book. But let me just expand on some of these things in this segment, and let me talk about the Chinese stock markets. In short, there's really no other way to put it, Chinese markets have collapsed. Why? Well, since the financial crisis, total Chinese debt has increased by more than 400%. That's a significant increase in debt. About the time of the financial crisis, total Chinese debt totaled $7 trillion. Today, total Chinese debt is approximately $28 trillion, and nearly half that debt is attributable to real estate loans and unregulated shadow banking activities. Now, it should be obvious to anyone who looks at these numbers that you can't accumulate debt by quadrupling it in 7 or 8 years. This takes us back to the eternal economic truth that if there's too much debt to be paid, it won't all be paid, and China is no exception to that rule. Now, given China's high level of debt, I believe the country will have to experience deflationary symptoms, and one deflationary symptom is a stock market correction, and it is happening now. In fact, the Shanghai Composite this year is down about 40%, and I expect there will be more significant downside for Chinese stock markets moving ahead, because I believe that China's debt bubble is just beginning to unwind. Historically speaking, when one studies bubbles, you realize that bubbles take about as long to unwind as they do to build. So I would expect not only more downside for Chinese stocks, but also more pain for the Chinese economy. To put China's debt bubble in perspective, China's local government debt, just local government debt, is now greater than the entire output of the German economy. So I expect that China will experience deflation along with the rest of the world, barring massive currency printing. However, the upside for China, in my opinion, is that I believe China's economy will be one of the first to recover, as China's debt is somewhat unique in that it is largely internal, unlike the debt of the United States. Now, when you talk about an economic winter season and you talk about debt excesses, one of the things that goes hand in hand with debt excesses are bank failures. Now, during the last financial crisis, U.S. banks, as we talked about already, were bailed out by U.S. taxpayers. However, 2 years ago, when banks in the country of Cyprus failed, there was no government bailout. Instead, there was something called a bail-in. Now, a bail-in sounds innocent and innocuous enough on the surface, but it's not. It's actually an outright confiscation of depositors' money. In Cyprus, a depositor who had more than 100,000 euros on deposit had a portion of the excess amount confiscated. The New York Times recently recounted the plight of a gentleman who managed an ad agency. The gentleman's name was Christo Savitas. Mr. Savitas lost hundreds of thousands of dollars in euros that he had on deposit with Cyprus banks, and the bad part for Mr. Savitas was this money was not even his money, it was money he had taken from clients to spend on advertising. In addition to the bail-in, Cypriot banks implemented capital controls, which limited the amount of money a depositor could withdraw in cash from his or her account. Well, that Cypriot drama is currently being played out in Greece. Greek banks have recently implemented capital controls, just like the banks in Cyprus did. There are also limitations on exporting the currency out of the country. I expect the Greek banks' financial condition to continue to deteriorate. And as of now, Greek banks are reporting that their bad loan rate is in excess of 45% of all loans made. That high percentage of bad loans is typical of debt excesses seen during an economic winter season, and the point I'm making today is that these seasons cycle and repeat themselves. In the book, New Retirement Rules, and in the update, I talk about prior economic winter seasons that have existed in the United States. These winter seasons existed in the late 1830s, the 1870s, and the 1930s, and during every one of these economic winter seasons, because debt levels got too high, because banks had made bad loans, because monetary policy was one of easy money, there were bank failures in every one of these economic winter seasons. I expect to see banking system failures continue to increase in the years ahead, and I don't think there's many countries around the world, in my opinion, that will escape the chaos. Now, what's been the response of world central banks? Well, they've printed money. Although central bankers never actually say they're creating currency out of thin air. Instead, they use terms like quantitative easing to describe their activities. But as the old saying goes, you can put perfume on a pig and it's still a pig. You can call printing currency something other than printing currency, but at the end of the day, it's still printing currency. As I discussed in my book, it's always the preferred last resort for politicians, going all the way back to 486 BC in Greece. In Argentina, money printing has occurred in earnest. There has been massive inflation in Argentina because they printed so much money. The country has no choice. After defaulting on debt for the second time in the last 15 years, the country has no access to credit markets. What does that mean? Simply put, Argentina just can't get a loan. Absent credit, absent the availability of a loan, the country has been forced to turn on the proverbial printing press. As a result, inflation in the country is now 40% annually, up from 25% annually last year. In an attempt to deal with a very high inflation rate, the Argentine government has implemented price controls since 2013. This is predictable. Historically speaking, when policymakers have printed too much money, price controls have been implemented, and price controls are used by governments to attempt to keep consumer prices in check. But they never work. If you apply just a little bit of common sense, you'll understand why. If you tell a producer of a product for how much he or she can sell the product, and it becomes impossible to produce the product and sell the product for a profit, the producer stops producing. That's what's happened in Argentina. As a result of price controls, there are shortages of groceries, and the Argentine government has begun to limit the quantities of certain items that can be purchased. The country of Venezuela is experiencing a similar economic outcome to that of Argentina as a result of massive inflation and price controls. Now, as I discuss in my book, New Retirement Rules, in an economic winter season, when there's too much debt to be paid, there's only two possible outcomes in my view. One, you get inflation followed by deflation. That's what happened in Weimar Germany. Or you simply get deflation. And as we look around the globe now, it's far easier, unfortunately, to find examples of each. Now, I've already discussed my view that I believe there will have to be more banking failures moving ahead on an even larger scale than what we've experienced to date. Let me share some of the actual numbers with you to make my point. Now, despite the fact that legislation was passed to keep the growth of the too-big-to-fail banks in check, and prevent these banks from engaging in the same risky activity that got these banks into trouble in the first place, not all that much has changed since the financial crisis. The facts show that these too-big-to-fail banks have gotten even bigger and are still involved in the same high-risk activities that got them into trouble before. Now, when you add all the assets of the too-big-to-fail banks together, and there are six of them, you find the total assets to be just under $10 trillion, $9.8 trillion to be exact. The total exposure to derivatives of these too-big-to-fail banks is now $278 trillion, or about 28 times the total assets of the banks. Now, if you aren't familiar with derivatives, let me offer just a brief, maybe even admittedly oversimplified explanation. To keep it simple, a derivative is not an investment in anything. When you buy a stock, you're purchasing an ownership interest in the country. When you buy a bond, you're loaning a company money, and the assets of the company are at least partially collateralizing your loan to the company. But a derivative is different. Essentially, a derivative is a bet about what will or what will not happen in the future, such as interest rates moving up and down. Now, lest you think I'm an alarmist, take a listen as to what one CEO of one of the two big-to-fail banks wrote to shareholders not long ago. And I'm taking one sentence out of a big, long communication. But I'm quoting, "Some things never change. There will be another crisis, and its impact will be felt by the financial market." And it's not just the two big-to-fail banks that have massive financial risk from debt overaccumulation. Worldwide, debt levels have ballooned since the financial crisis. Since 2007, worldwide debt levels have increased by more than $57 trillion. Household debt, corporate debt, government debt, and financial debt are all higher than at the beginning of the last financial crisis. This will eventually have to be, based on my study of history, deflationary on an enormously painful scale. Significant deflation has only been avoided to this point because of the colossal printing of money that has been taking place worldwide. Now, if you read the new retirement rules book, or if you decide to read the update, you'll see from our study of history in the book that money printing only delays the inevitable, and it makes the inevitable more painful. While the money creation of world central banks has delayed many of the deflationary symptoms of a severe economic winter season, ultimately, as I said, I believe we will see trade wars. I believe we'll see tremendous stock market declines. We'll see even lower labor force participation rates, lower commodity prices, and I believe we'll see fiat currency failures. We are now around the world already witnessing the beginning of each of these trends. Now, if you'd like to learn more, I would invite you to register for our upcoming New Retirement Rules class. There's a class coming up on Saturday, October the 10th. It begins at 9 a.m. and concludes at 2:30 p.m. Full details are available at the website, newretirementrules.com. The website, again, newretirementrules.com. And if you'd like to get my weekly update as to what's going on in the markets and the economy, I have a weekly newsletter titled Portfolio Watch that's distributed absolutely free. If you'd like to get a copy of the newsletter every week delivered to your email box, just visit yourretirementoutlook.com and subscribe. The website, again, is yourretirementoutlook.com. And a quick reminder, we do have a Social Security Maximization Free Dinner Workshop coming up on September the 24th. Details are at socialsecuritydinner.com. That's all the time I have for this week. Hope you got something you can use. Bye.